You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story.
Today's guest is Peter Levitan.
The people that can parse out what to do, a company or a person that can help you or help themselves figure out what the right mix is, and it has to be a short list, is going to win in this game because there's just too much.
Peter is a consultant for advertising, digital, and PR agencies and a host of the podcast Advertising Stories. During his 16 years at Saatchi & Saatchi Advertising Worldwide, Peter ran business development across Europe and the U.S., was EVP Management Director in London and New York, and was GM of the Minneapolis office. Peter has bought and sold three agencies and was CEO and founder of two major internet startups during the dot-com boom, one of which was sold to Microsoft. Peter now uses his vast experience to counsel and coach agencies across the globe on how to build kick-ass business development programs. He has done this while being a true digital nomad. Peter, welcome to On Brand.
Good day.
Good day. I like, you know, true to being a digital nomad, no clue where anybody is. Good day is probably always a safe salutation.
Man, I've been spanked, you know, for mentioning moments in time. You know, yesterday was the earthquake, and they said, no, you can't say that. You know, the whole drill.
Yeah. So where does this day, this good day, find this digital nomad?
I am in a town in Mexico that Condé Nast Traveler says is the best small city in the world. The town is called San Miguel de Allende, and it's in central Mexico. So no beaches and really cool people.
Well, that is wonderful. But having gone through your bio and finding me, you being in central Mexico and me probably being straight north in Iowa, in the center of the country. I was going to bring up some weather disparity, but you running the Minneapolis office of Saatchi & Saatchi probably knows a thing or two about the kind of weather that I'm watching out my window as the snow creeps in.
I will tell you that teeth chattering are two words I haven't said in many years.
Yeah. So as someone that has been everywhere and has ultimately settled down somewhat, you did not choose the teeth-chattering Midwest.
No, I've even got rid of my coat. So God forbid my relatives in Montana. Actually, maybe I saved one puffy jacket. I try not to go there in the winter.
Oh, you know, that for this lifelong Iowan, that idea, that sentence that you just said, the liberation that would come of getting rid of the coats is unfathomable and amazing and something to think about someday. So we've now scratched all of the weather items, the weather small talk off the list. But I want to get into the Wayback Machine, because in your extended bio, it talks about your education and graduating from the San Francisco Art Institute. And as listeners of the show know, I love when we can learn something about our guest's background. And I think it's probably true that background from the Art Institute informed your work in advertising. But I'd be fascinated to hear how.
Well, there's something that you say in things that I've read that you've written, because you wrote them and then I read them. I think that's how it normally works, at least that's
usually.
Usually. I'm a believer in art and science. And I went to art school because I was thrown out of Boston University for never going to class. Eventually, 2 years in, we had our final conversation. And they said, we don't really think you want to be here. Everybody figured it out, right? And I didn't want to sit in geology classes or do whatever I had to do to get to get my degree. So I woke up one day. I said, I'm a photographer and have been that since I was in high school. And photography is art and science. It's probably gotten more science lately with digital, but it is art and science, and it's ideas, and it's using technology to express yourself. So I would say that was a really great background. And I'm not alone, of course, in the advertising and marketing world. There are a lot of people like me. But it is that combination, and it's been more of that combination as we've moved forward, because there's so much, I'll call it science or technology or digital this or digital that, that informs what we're doing. But the bottom line is you still have to have that art component.
Well, it's interesting, and I've come full circle because I teach now at a college of business, but I never attended a college of business. So I'm still, even though as a faculty member, I'm strangely an outsider, and I studied theater arts and psychology, so the literal arts and science, but I am amazed at how applicable understanding art, understanding collaboration, understanding the integration of ideas, visual communication, so much of that is applied daily and not even tangentially. It's incredibly applicable to the work that we do. And I think that sometimes those looking at the branding, advertising, marketing industry from the outside assume that there's this incredibly linear track. And while I don't want to knock that, because that's, again, one of the places that I hang my hat, I also think it's really important to look beyond, especially when it comes to the art and science of influencing others, of creating ideas.
Well, there's no question about that. I'll put it very simply. There are platforms today, and I'll use one that's new and I think everyone should sign up for and check out, and that's TikTok. Just, it's a time suck, right? It's one of those, gee, how did I just spend 45 minutes looking at this? It's very interesting to start to parse it out if you are a marketer or just even oriented towards thinking about the world that way. How do the visuals on TikTok work? Why does one person do better than another? How does someone express themselves more clearly? How does someone entertain you more? And how does somebody grab your attention? I use a word over and over again with my clients called how to be unignorable. Because if you're not unignorable, you're ignorable. Well, believe me, it can be a problem. Just think back to dating. When you were ignorable, it didn't really work very well. So that is art and science. It's understanding the technology, and it's understanding how to grab people's attentions and how to get a message across and how to get paid attention to. I'll go back to that word attention. That's the hardest thing right now, I think, in our world, given the number of places that people are looking and getting pulled into and getting flipped out every day. We're inundated. So science and art, yes.
Well, I love that trajectory too, because we started in the way back machine of your education and interest in photography, and then zooming ahead to TikTok. And do you find, I think that there's a struggle among marketers, as so many things keep, like you said, that what the reason why we're fighting for attention is all of this noise, all of these platforms, and yet you're still able to be fascinated by TikTok or what follows TikTok. What would you say to maybe some of the exhausted marketers out there of, in this snowstorm of media frenzy, and we're trying to cut through, shovel through, maybe I'm extending this metaphor too much, but get through that, how do we still stay interested in what's next?
It is difficult. However, if you are paid to be a marketer, you have to pay attention to these things. I think that the people that can parse out what to do, can figure out what the best media mix is, and this sounds like something that's been going on for generations, but it's harder today. A company or a person that can help you or help themselves figure out what the right mix is, and it has to be a short list, is going to win in this game because there's just too much. I know I talk to client types all the time. So my actual clients, although it trends some days differently, are advertising agencies. I talk to their clients. And if you're a marketing director today, you're just overwhelmed. And if you could find people that can provide the logic, the experience, and even the data that will help you make a decision that you'll feel good about, if you can find that person, you are in heaven, marketing heaven today. But I mean, I could sit here and make a list of 20 platforms that any brand can work on. But it's always come down to what are the demographics, what makes sense for the brand. I mean, I could go down the list, but if you can solve that problem, you're a winner in today's marketplace.
Hey, On Brand listeners. We talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged superfans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written 2 books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with 2 A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show.
So we've, on that, building on this note that you've talked about on being a winner in today's marketplace, your career trajectory, which has taken you to the heights of the agency business, you now spend your time advising agencies, marketing, PR firms. What do you see if you're liken it to being like an ER doc, if you what presents most often in terms of challenges or what folks are struggling with on the agency side today?
I'll say 2 things. One is the cobbler's shoe problem, which is the metaphor I often hear, which is that, you know, the cobbler is so busy making shoes for other people, he doesn't make them for his children. And what agencies experience, and a lot of sales organizations experience, sometimes is they're working so hard on their current client base that they are not working on their sales program. And that's a major issue for many, many marketing companies. They're so busy working for their clients that they're not working for themselves. And what happens today is clients will walk out the back door. And if you're not bringing them in the front door, then you're essentially have a losing proposition. So I would say that's the critical one. The other is, how are you known in the marketplace? And again, both of these are very obvious, which is, one, you need to have a sales program. And the second is, what is your brand position in the market? It's very difficult to be everything to everybody. And I think what we're seeing these days is specialists or experts are the types of agencies and PR companies and digital companies that are moving forward. Find your niche.
And if someone listens to that, and what I love about, you've talked about being corrected on time, but we're coming, this episode, I should have mentioned this beforehand, bad podcast host. We're coming out right away, and it is the end of a year, and a crazy year at that. And a lot of folks are taking a step back, looking at their businesses and thinking that. And your call to focus, I'm sure there were folks out there listening and thinking, yes, 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 we need to do that. But I think that's advice you hear in the marketing business, in the agency business, but it's also a struggle because of what we've talked about in the first half of the show of the joy of creativity, of new things. And a lot of times we're hesitant to kind of just park it on one industry, on one area of focus. So what would you say to someone that says, yes, I need to do that, but how? Where do you start? Where can you start?
I start with a business plan. This is a shocking
list. Well, I was going to say, that sounds incredibly boring.
Yeah, a shocking. Well, and so when I say to sometimes the first question I ask a client of mine for my consultancy is, do you have a business plan? And often they say no. And it's I think part of it is a function of the kind of companies that I work with. And when they say no, I said, look, let me just say what I mean by business plan. Do you know how you make money? Right. So you need to know what you're selling. You need to know what people are buying. You know, need to know the type of people that are buying. You need to need to know your pricing. I don't need notebooks for a business plan. I mean, it's, you know, just let's just keep it that simple. And that's the initial conversation, because you can't develop a marketing plan unless you understand how you're going to make money. And it's strangely shocking, you know, especially in the world of some of the very, very creative companies I work with. They are just not oriented towards really understanding the business. And I'm going to say that works across many industries. They're not alone. It's, you know, I make a widget, somebody buys my widget. I haven't stopped to think about the business from a higher perspective lately. You know, it's my dad's business. I inherited it. We make widgets. You need the business plan, especially in today's environment where things are accelerating at an incredible pace. I mean, it's just, look at the two companies, and I know this is timely, and I'll say it more generally, that have gone public recently, Airbnb and DoorDash. Airbnb is now larger than all of the hotel chains, I think, combined. I might be wrong. And DoorDash delivers food to your house. And, you know, we're in a changing world. If your business doesn't change and you don't take another look at your business plan, I think you could have some problems down the road.
Well, what I loved that you said in there too was a consistent theme with me is a lot of times when we think about plans, strategies, those are words that carry a lot of baggage, and it's physically a lot of baggage. That doesn't look like a plan. It's got to be this great big exhaustive thing. And it can be simple. It can be, you know, a one-page directional document if it has focus, which from what you're saying is really what it needs.
I am considering starting a business that I considered starting back in the 80s, and it fits into the sort of my style of how I do work for my clients. But it's essentially a curation business where I help people. I'm debating whether it's 45 plus or 55 plus, you know, which demographic. I am exposed to so much information, and I am very good at expressing what I the information I find and what its benefits or what its problems are. I can be irreverent, and I think, and that's something we can talk about if you want at some point, you know, what is your attitude and how do you come across to people and why are you different than the next guy? But the working title of this is Next. And the idea is that what interests me, and I know this interests millions of other people, and I keep finding things. And I'll use an example of something we've all used in the past year. What have you seen on Netflix lately that you like? You know, we hear this every day now. I just saw the chess show on Netflix. You should watch it.
Queen's Gambit.
Right. Or Ted Lasso on Apple TV, which is kind of a cute show. Right. Well, I come across 1,000 things a week, and I'm very good at saying to people, when this is over, here's a great hotel for you to go to in Delray Beach, and down the block is a bar, and you'll have a good time. And I'm thinking that I can do that in tidbits. But, man, when I sit down and start to write it out and figure out how am I going to do this, it's very, very complex. So it's an advantage for me in my business is I play with TikTok. I try to think about it because it also is beneficial. My knowledge is beneficial for my clients. But where does TikTok play a year from now in a curatorial business? Very interesting stuff to think about.
You know, it really is. And one thing I want to think as we talk about refocusing business is yet another extension of your work. And that is your book that, as I understand it, you're rewriting The Levitan Pitch. Buy this book, win more pitches. And certainly with your experience at the agencies, startups that you've run and sold, pitching is such a big part of that, both at the selling, pitching the whole business level, but also pitching individual pieces of work too. So what are the kind of quick hits of what you've learned on the pitching front?
The reason I'm rewriting the book is I've had, and when I say rewrite, I'm going to say that the book is incredibly fabulous. It would like being saying something like I'm rewriting the Bible. let's just say you had the Old Testament. I'm rewriting the Bible. I'm just adding the New Testament. the reason I'm going to add things to the book is that we're living in our Zoom world, Zoom or Skype, and people have asked me, how would you modify what you've written about for us not being in in-person meetings? So that's the genesis of thinking about that. You asked what works, maybe doesn't work in a pitch or a presentation. One of the people I interviewed for this book is a neuroscientist, and one of his major points is that, and I'm going to say something so obvious, we're all going to nod. People remember the first thing you say and the last thing you say, mm-hmm. right? And it is especially dialed up in a Zoom meeting or in a Skype meeting. People can get scattered. So how you manage a meeting online is somewhat different than you do when you're sitting in a room. Some things are the same, some things aren't. And that's the reason for my sort of going back in and thinking about this. And I interviewed, to get me there, I interviewed what's called an agency search consultant. And her job is Nabisco comes to her and she finds the right agencies they should talk to. So a very powerful person in the industry. Another person is a owner of an agency that just won one of those dating app companies. And how did she craft a 60-minute pitch? And then the last person was the neuroscientist who, you know, my brain is like swimming, but he's talking about how the brain works in a sales pitch. So, and when I say sales pitch, I mean, this could be a simple, you know, I would think it would work at retail. This kind of information is applicable, not just in a big pitch with a lot of people in the room, but even in day-to-day sales.
Well, I love what you said, and I'm a big believer in the, you know, primacy effect, recency effect, yep. That first last thing. But I think that's a fascinating lens and yet another example to look at. I feel like there's several things that have changed in this new world, in this crazy year that we've been talking about. But I feel the big things consistently seem like they are not things that are black and white different. These are trends that were out of nowhere. These were things that were happening, trends that we were moving towards anyways. This pandemic just kind of took a bucket of gasoline and tossed it on the spark. And now we have a big raging fire to contend with. And I think because of how highly distractible we are now, those first and last things matter most. So are there any, before we wrap up here, are there any kind of quick hits as someone that just had that light bulb go off of, oh my gosh, I've got to get better at the first and last thing. Are there any secrets to nailing that first and last thing on listeners' next meeting?
I'll tell you a quick little story. I had a agency client that specialized in not-for-profits. They were about to pitch the Salvation Army. We're talking about a huge account.
Yeah.
And I worked with them for really a short period of time because they had some problems with how they crafted a presentation. I said one thing is, you know, you can't wait till the 10th slide to talk about the client. You have to talk about them quickly. It's right. Like a date. I always use dating as a metaphor. It's like a date where you only talk about yourself when you're out to dinner. It doesn't work very well. Okay. So here's what they did. I advised them to lead with some research, and they went off on their own and they did this. They asked a bunch of people through research, which of the top five charities need your money the most? And the charity that came in last was Salvation Army. And that's how they opened the meeting. And the people at Salvation Army said, we didn't know that. And it was like sticking a hook in a fish's mouth. At that point, this is a bad word, but they owned the prospective client because they told them something that they never knew. They told them something that affected the rest of the conversation. And if you tell a charity that people think you don't need the money, that they don't need the money, that crafts, yeah, a very meaningful conversation. So over the years, I've always counseled people to see to find some tidbit that will grab somebody's attention right away.
That's a great moment to create and to kick off a meeting. So, Peter, as we start to wrap up here, speaking of getting attention, it is time for me to ask you a brand that has gotten your attention recently, a brand that has made you smile.
Well, I'm very happy about the Ford Motor Car Company, which, you know, we've forgotten about because now we only pay attention to electric cars. My second car was a 1973 Ford Bronco. It's when they were boxy. And Ford just reintroduced the Ford Bronco. And I heard that, it made me smile. Someday I will buy a new Ford Bronco. So it's on my list, and they did a great job of introducing it. And of course, it was really built on people like me remembering the Ford Bronco, not necessarily OJ driving a Ford Bronco. But so that brand brought a smile to me.
That's a great example, too, and of a brand that meant something and a brand that you can bring back and the value in doing that, because it does. I mean, we're talking about it in the context of a smile, but brands have feelings, have emotions tied to them. So that's a great way to access that.
Yep.
Peter, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, I make it really difficult for people. I use my name.
Oh, no.
I know. It's hard. Peter, which I think most people can spell. And then my last name is Levitan, Levitan. And if they go there, they will see Borat giving me, doing a little video for me. So it'll be fun.
Well, folks, if that hasn't drawn you to peterlevitan.com, I don't know what will. And if that is challenging, I will link up to all of this in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at onbrandpodcast.com. Peter, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you.
And a reminder, if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile as though you've remembered the existence of the Ford Bronco, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.